Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the results of primary elections in eight states yesterday, with close attention being paid to New Jersey and California for signs of a blue wave that could sweep away Republican control of the House in November. Ed Kilgore, the managing editor of The Democratic Strategist and a political columnist for New York Magazine, where his latest article is California Democrats Did Well But Not Perfectly in Primary, joins us to discuss the light turnout by Democrats who narrowly avoided being shut out of key House races. And in spite of Trump's unpopularity in the Golden State, there was a strong showing by Republicans. With a considerable number of mail-in ballots yet to be counted, we will analyze whether in a number of close races where a Democratic candidate in a crowded field of other Democratic hopefuls managed to slip into second place behind a Republican incumbent, the chances of a blue wave upset in November could be diminished. And since the margins between Democratic challengers in second and third places are so close, with 2.7 million mail-in ballots now being counted, we'll assess who might end up being the most viable Democratic candidates in the general, since some were chosen by the DCCC and others by the California Democratic Party. Then, with the opposition candidate Lopez Obrador polling over 50%, way ahead of other candidates, including the pre-party of outgoing President Peña Nieto, we will go to Mexico City to examine the latest twists in the tortured saga of the 43 missing students, which has gripped Mexico and led to Peña Nieto's downfall. John Gibler, the author of I Couldn't Even Imagine That They Would Kill Us, an oral history of the attacks against the students in Ayotzinapa, joins us to discuss how a Mexican federal court has ordered the government to investigate the 2014 disappearances again, this time under the supervision of a truth commission led by Mexico's National Commission for Human Rights, along with parents of the victims. This time, the court insists that for the first time, the role of the federal police and the army in the massacre and disappearances has to be investigated. Then finally, we will speak with David Phillips, a former senior advisor and foreign policy expert to the State Department under Presidents Clinton, Bush, and Obama. He joins us to look into a major strategic blunder underway with Secretary of State Pompeo making a deal with Turkey to sell out the Kurds over the objections of Secretary of Defense Mattis. We will try to make sense of why Trump is letting ISIS off the hook just as it is about to be finished off and rewarding Turkey, Russia, and Iran against the national security interests of the United States. Joining us now is Ed Kilgore, a political columnist for New York Magazine, the managing editor of the Democratic Strategist and online forum. He was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal state relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. His latest article at New York Magazine is California Democrats Did Well, But Not Perfectly in Primary. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ed Kilgore.
Thanks, Ian.
And I frankly am mystified, Ed, why Democrats aren't more motivated. I thought there was a real sense of outrage at Donald Trump and what he's doing. And in particular, since the Latino turnout was so poor, along with the Democratic turnout here in California, this key state that was supposed to be the leading edge of the blue wave that'll sweep the Republicans out of the House in November, the Latinos didn't show up, and yet you've got Latino children being ripped from the arms of their parents on the border by the Trump administration. Nothing could be more hideous. So what's going on?
Well, the low participation in primaries and in midterm elections among young and Latino voters is a very, very, very old story. It didn't just start, didn't just happen last year, didn't just happen the year before last. It's been true, really, basically since people started measuring these things, and there are pretty obvious, understandable reasons why young people are not terribly rooted in any given community. With Latinos, obviously, there are citizenship issues with some, and they, too, often have very mobile lifestyles. So, it's not like this just happened. And I think, California's top two primary is very confusing to an awful lot of voters. I mean, I live in California, and when I got my ballot with 32 U.S. Senate candidates, I wanted to just throw it in the trash myself. So I think now that we've gone through two midterm primaries under the top two system with just abysmal turnout, in 2014 it was the lowest in California history. Looks like it's going to be a little bit better this time, but not massively. I think it is time to ask whether the system itself is discouraging participation, because it just doesn't make sense to people.
You make in your article, Ed, you make the connection between the low turnout of Latinos for Kevin De Leon's pretty poor showing in a race where, of course, Senator Dianne Feinstein was way ahead. But for a while there, it didn't even look that Kevin De Leon would be in second place. And Antonio Villaraigosa, I think, what was it, $24 million was poured into his campaign by backers of charter schools, and he made a very, very poor showing.
Yeah, he wound up with, well, I don't know. Again, we need to preface all this by saying that the votes are still coming in. I think as of this morning, I heard one estimate that one-fourth of the vote was still out. Since California allows you to postmark a mail ballot on Election Day, and as long as it arrives in a county election office by Friday the 8th, it still gets counted. So there are a lot of votes still being counted. We need to keep pointing that out. But, you know, as of this morning, Villaraigosa was being beat 2-1 by John Cox, Donald Trump's candidate, which is not much what you expect to occur in California, particularly with Villaraigosa, a pretty well-known guy. I mean, he was mayor of Los Angeles for quite some time and was in the national spotlight. And, yes, he did benefit from massive spending. So, to me, that was one of the biggest surprises of the election night, not just that Villaraigosa didn't make the top two, but the margin was so huge.
So it was not just a bad night for Villaraigosa, but for Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, who put up millions of dollars, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. They're, you know, the same people are also backing a candidate for the nonpartisan office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. It'll be that race will go to the general election in the fall. It'll be interesting to see if they put up that kind of money in that race for what's basically a symbolic office. But the war they're having with the teachers unions in California is, you know, beyond reason, clearly.
And again, I'm speaking with Ed Kilgore, political columnist for New York Magazine, the managing editor of The Democratic Strategist, an online forum. And he was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal state relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. And his latest article at New York Magazine is California Democrats Did Well, But Not Perfectly in Primary. Now, in terms of the enthusiasm gap, where I thought the enthusiasm would be all on the side of Democrats, it looks as if there was a considerable amount of enthusiasm on the side of Republicans, does it not? Particularly with the candidate for governor, who was endorsed by Trump, doing so well. Rohrabacher did well. A whole bunch of them did pretty well. And the incumbents did very well. Steve Knight did much better than people expected. So it makes me think maybe they're not so endangered.
Well, again, you got to keep two things in mind. One, we haven't seen all the votes. And I know some pretty smart people who think that the Democratic percentage of the vote is going to go up in these final mail ballots quite a bit because Democrats tend to be late deciders. The second thing is that the general electorate tends to be significantly more pro-democratic in California than the primary electorate. Ironically, part of the reason for that is that independents really don't like to participate in the top two primary, even though the whole thing was designed with them in mind. And in California, independents skew democratic. So, you know, yes, there was certainly not this sort of huge enthusiasm gap that we're used to seeing in special elections, but it may not. You know, overall, as of this morning, it looked like the voting pattern was 60-40 Democratic statewide. you know, with a lot of local variations. And if that goes up to like 63 or 64 by the time all the votes are counted, that's a pretty good advantage for Democrats, particularly when you consider that the electorate in November will be much larger and typically more diverse. I did note in my piece, though, that the Republicans have a couple tricks up their sleeves that will help with their voters. The most obvious is a gas tax repeal ballot initiative, which hasn't been certified yet, but almost certainly will be. And what's interesting is that that initiative was financed by basically by the California Republican Party and several individual campaigns, like Mimi Walters' campaign, but a ton of money in it, because they think that's going to be the big turnout generator for their vote, you know, particularly where in Orange County, where this whole backlash to the gas tax increase seems to have developed most, and where they just recalled a state senator, a Democrat from Orange County, was recalled yesterday. His only crime was, you know, voting for the gas tax increase. So that Republicans really do believe that that's going to juice up their vote significantly. And there's also going to be a ballot initiative to sort of to expand the Prop 13 tax benefit for homeowners over the age of 55. And I mean, as I observed at some other point today, they might have just called this, you know, the tax exemption for Republicans, considering where the benefits are going to be targeted. So, you know, those two things on the ballot in November will help Republicans offset at least some of the anti-Trump enthusiasm among Democrats.
But, Ed, how come the Democrats weren't able to use the incredibly powerful issue that the Republicans, in a petty and vindictive way, raised the taxes on California to punish this successful blue state by getting rid of the state and local tax deduction, which raised the taxes for everybody in California? You'd think that would be a winning issue.
Well, it probably will be. Again, this is a primary. In a lot of these primaries, Democrats were jockeying for position with each other and trying to achieve name identification. So you shouldn't have expected, and we didn't get, a highly substantive campaign. But I do think that will be a theme, you know, particularly in some of these higher income areas like Orange County, where losing that or capping the property tax or state income tax deduction and also limiting the home interest deduction, which the bill also did, is really going to hurt some people, a lot of people that normally vote Republican. So, yeah, I think we'll hear more about that between now and November. It's still a long way to go till November.
Well, let's talk about this wild card here with the mail-in ballots. 11 million mail-in ballots were sent out to registered voters. And there's about, what, 2.7 million have been returned, and they're being counted now. Right? Yeah. So that's quite a lot, given the numbers that we had. And in some of these races where you had Democrats coming in the second and third slots, or barely coming in at all behind a Republican incumbent, the numbers could switch, right, in a number of those races. And in the
It depends on how much stock you put in this theory that the late vote is usually more Democratic. I mean, last time I looked, there were no Democrats that were going to be locked out of a general election. There was a Democrat in every single district. There are actually, I think, 9 Republicans that are going to be locked out of Democratic general elections in Democratic districts. But you know, in the competitive races that people actually care about, at the moment, Democrats are not in any danger of a lockout, but it's just too close in a couple of districts to know for sure. Then you got this whole insane situation in Los Angeles County where apparently 118,000 registered voters were not on the voter rolls when they showed up, and, you know, were because of some printer glitch is what we've been told, and that they were asked to cast provisional ballots, which will be counted very late. And in addition, you don't know how many of those people just turned around and went home. In fact, I have speculated that that might have something to do with a really poor showing by De Leon and Villaraigosa, since both are from Los Angeles County, but, you know, we'll just have to see.
Well, but, for example, the race, the Rohrabacher race, and I thought he was very vulnerable. I mean, after all, Kevin McCarthy, the number two Republican in the House, likely to be the next speaker if the Republicans hold the House, said in a private conversation with Paul Ryan and other top Republicans, I swear to God, Donald Trump and Dana Rohrabacher are on Putin's payroll. I mean, this is a guy that should be incredibly vulnerable. The DCCC ran one candidate.
He didn't do very well either, did he?
I mean, no, but I was going to get to the fact that the DCCC ran somebody and the Democratic California Democratic Party ran another candidate, and they're very within a whisker of each other. So the mail-in ballot could change that dynamic, could it not? Who gets to run against Rohrabacher?
Yeah, I mean, the people I've talked to think that the gap between both of those candidates you mentioned and the second Republican, Scott Baugh, is probably going to increase. You know, we'll have to see. That was a really convoluted situation, though. You had a candidate backed by the National Party who was endorsed by the state party. Then allegations came out of he was a professor, came out of him, you know, supposedly sexually harassing students. That was investigated. He says it's a lie. The university says it's a lie. By then, the DCCC had shifted to another candidate. Just a, you know, kind of a perfect storm of mistakes. So I don't really know who to blame for that series. I mean, that sort of thing could happen almost anywhere. Again, if you had to have a culprit, it's the top two system that throws all these candidates in there together. But I mean, Rohrabacher is in deep trouble. Don't be mistaken about that. In fact, getting another Republican in there may have been the only thing that could have saved him. But I thought it was interesting that Donald Trump, of all these candidates in California, there are two that he congratulated publicly. One, which makes some sense, is John Cox, the gubernatorial candidate that he endorsed. But the other one was Dana Rohrabacher. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether it's because he thought the guy needed help or what it was, but, you know, I think Rohrabacher's, you know, in big, big trouble.
Well, maybe it's because they have a mutual friend in the Kremlin. But
yeah, well, that's the obvious joke, but you wouldn't think that Trump would want to draw attention to that,
right,
would you?
Well, just in closing, though, Ed, there was an expectation that about seven of these Republican seats would be picked up by the Democrats and flipped in November. As of now, has it gone down a bit, or do you still think there's seven?
No, I think it. I mean, you know, the Cook Political Report had, I think, five of those seats as either toss-ups or leaners, and two others likely Republican, which means, I think they had seven in the most competitive category and the two other likelies. So, you know, I don't think we should assume that because a district went for Hillary Clinton in 2016, though, they're going to necessarily go for a Democrat in a U.S. House race. All these people ran ahead of Trump, all these incumbents, in 2016. So I think, sure, it makes sense for Democrats to target all seven, and maybe a couple more will come into view, too. But, you know, I don't think anybody assumes that Democrats are going to sweep all seven or that they'll need to sweep all seven in order to take back the House. I mean, there are four marginal seats in New Jersey where primaries occurred yesterday. There are two more in Iowa where we had primaries yesterday. There are four or five in Pennsylvania. So, you know, whereas California is very important, I think we may be overstating it just a bit. Democrats don't have to win all of these targeted seats. But, you know, again, we have to wait and see what the final vote looks like to sort of see what we're contending with going into November. But, you know, I think Democrats have about the same chance of taking back the House than they did 24 hours ago.
Well, Ed Kilgore, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Ed Kilgore, a political columnist for New York Magazine, the managing editor of the Democratic Strategist and Online Forum. He was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal, state, relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. His latest article at New York Magazine is California Democrats did well, but not perfectly in primary. We're going to take a brief station break and back discussing how a Mexican federal court has ordered the government to investigate the 2014 disappearances of 43 students again.